Welcome to the Just Be Real Sis podcast. I'm Dr. Angela.
And I'm Candace.
We believe that women can win together.
We live boldly.
We live authentically.
We live unapologetically.
And we encourage you to do the same.
We understand the need for real conversations with diverse perspectives because we are more alike than we are different.
We know that inclusion and honesty are our superpowers.
The only requirement to join us,
just be real, sis.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Just Be Real Sis podcast. We are so excited to be back with you all today, and even more excited for this amazing guest that we have on the show today. I know we're going to learn lots of things from this amazing woman, and as you know, that's our goal here at Just Be Real Sis, to bring in wonderful women who are doing amazing things. So, sister, if you'll tell us a little bit more about today's guest, she's amazing.
There's so much to tell. This is going to be a really awesome episode. We have Carol Coletta. She's currently the president and CEO of the Memphis River Parks Partnership. She is leading the relaunch of a nonprofit to develop and manage a program that's going to be 6 miles on the riverfront and 5 park districts along the Mississippi River, so along the mighty Mississippi. And she also, for several years, was the host and producer of a syndicated weekly public radio show called Smart City, where she has interviewed over, get this, sister, 900 international leaders. So we can definitely learn something from her. And they've reached across from business to arts and in a variety of different backgrounds. And she continues having conversations with urban leaders in our communities, talking about the cities on a podcast. So this is going to be a great conversation, and I'm so looking forward to it. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you so much.
You look fabulous.
Oh, aren't you kind? Thank you.
It looks amazing. Well, I'm already like very excited about this just because even though we'll be doing the interview, I already know we're going to learn so much today. You know how excited we get about learning. So
right.
We want to start off because, you know, passion and motivation is something that we are very committed to here and Just Be Real Sis. So we wanted to just start the conversation with a question around, you know, your journey. Tell us more about your journey to your current passion.
Well, since I was very young, growing up in South Memphis, I've always had this passion for cities. I can't quite explain it, but even when I was a kid, you know, middle school age, I'd come downtown on the 13 Lauderdale bus and, you know, check out downtown and go to a fashion show and hear music and you could do that as a kid then, and you'd go independently and met people from all over the city. And I just thought downtown was magical. And that for me, that meant cities were magical. So I had a daughter really young, 18. A lot of people decided, like they do with a lot of young mothers, well, count her out. She's out of the game, right? But a lot of us, a lot of young mothers proved people wrong. And I entered University of Memphis when my daughter was 3 weeks old and sort of went as fast as I could to get out so that I could work and, you know, support her and myself, and had a wonderful set. The first woman, my first job, my real job, was in the University of Memphis athletic office, which was the sports information office, which was really fantastic. I'm a big sports fan. But then my first corporate job, I was hired by a woman. And she was a woman named Dottie Abbott. She was on WHER, which was the first and only total female disc jockey radio station that was started by Sam Phillips, who discovered Elvis, in case a little bit of Memphis trivia, in case you didn't know. But I went on to work with downtown Memphis early on when we were building some of the first downtown amenities, and you know, then started a number of entrepreneurial ventures, ended up working in national city work just because I think kept reaching out to people and trying to learn as I went, and eventually worked with a couple of major foundations along with a coalition of foundations, wound up back here in Memphis to take to work with the Kresge Foundation. And then this opportunity came along to run the 250 acres of riverfront that we have on the Memphis riverfront. And that seemed like a great job to have to learn more about how to make cities successful. If there's any one thread in my career, I'm obsessed with the question of how do you make cities successful? And we can talk about that more.
Wow. So the first thing I have to call out is I need to take you to the Memphis Escape Room. Have you been? It's the one where there's all these Memphis questions to get out of the room.
I'm a girl.
Right.
I got this. I was on the Quizm on the Air team, Grand Champions, at Hillcrest for 2 years. And my specialty was Memphis.
Listen, so I'm all things Memphis. And at the end of that room, they started asking me questions around the, or asking us questions around the Memphis Chicks. And there were some other questions that I just didn't know. And I was like, oh my goodness, but love your story. I tell you, just listening to you reminds me so much of myself simply because, you know, young mother, you said you were hired by a woman and I really have to call out there. You remembered her name, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you talk about in spite of and all the things growing up in Memphis that I was told that I couldn't do or wouldn't do or shouldn't do, which leads me to my question for you, which is, you know, this team for this redevelopment of Tom Lee, it's comprised of several women. And what would you say has really been the biggest and the, you know, benefit of this? What has been the greatest benefit of you working with all these women, which by the way is totally awesome, but I'd love to hear, you know, what you feel like the benefit is.
Well, it's interesting. They have brought, I don't want to ascribe special magical powers to women and with the idea that men can't also possess them, but I do think women tend to have a little more curiosity, a little more of a 180, even a 360 view of the possibilities. I think we probably have to tap dance more than men do, you know, kind of, juggle, plate spin. And I think that makes us really aware of our surroundings. I think we can be, I think we can sort of absorb information from lots of different places and look for that, look for different ways to be smart. And all of that, I think, is great for any team you're working on, no matter what field you're in. So diversity matters, you know, when you bring it to the table. And so that's what we've really tried to do here.
And I've always said, you know, from another woman, if I'm a mom, and, you know, you're running behind because, you know, the kids couldn't find a shoe or whatever it is, I definitely can relate. And we talk about that all the time. And I think one of the conversations Sis and I had not too long ago, someone was asking me about this podcast and why we do it. And they were really complimenting the platform. And they said, you know, you guys have such a good cadence when you're talking. Mm-hmm. And I said it to Sister and she said, because we really respect what the other one has to say. We respect our voices. And I think that's another unique thing that women bring. I know your struggle. I am you. You are me. And that's when you really start to see the magic happen.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's so true because, you know, even today at my age, and I'm always surprised by it, but, you know, we know when we're getting that pat on the head. Thank you, little lady, and move on now. You know, which always sort of takes me back. And then I think, oh, you know, how can I manage around this? So I think, you know, we should never do that to others and particularly other women. And I think it comes naturally to us not to be dismissive of the talents of others, even when sometimes they're hidden, even when sometimes they don't look like we think talent should look like, even when they have a life story that doesn't fit what we think, you know, talent the life story of a talented person should be. And that's good, right? Because that just, we're going to find more talent that way.
Agreed. Wholeheartedly agree. See, that's why you're here, because like we just knew that there was going to be this alignment between the three of us, because we could just sense, you know, with the energy of the work that you're doing, really, you're in the business of transformation. That's really what you do. And so to your point, there are often times where maybe you don't always meet, you know, this response of we're so excited about what you're doing, but you continue to move forward anyway. So what is it that motivates you that even in the face of obstacles or resistance or whatever those challenges are, what keeps you transforming cities across the country?
You know, first of all, I hate to lose. And, you know, I hate to be told no. And I want to win. I think, honestly, don't laugh, I think it's the South Memphis in me. You know, it's like... You know, you're not gonna get over on me, and it's the, I think also it's the experience of being told, being dismissed. You know, even at a very young, right at a very young age. Well, you know, one quote mistake, right, and so you're like, you know, set you aside. And I just, but more than that, in this job, I feel it's my hometown. It's Memphis. I feel so synergistic with Memphis, right? So aligned, because as a Black city, Memphis, right off the bat, just take the real estate. Our real estate has 25% devaluation because we're a majority Black city. That's because America at its base is a racist America, right? So, you know, I am determined that Black cities, and especially my Black city, is not going to be devalued, and we are going to persist and we are going to succeed. And you don't do that, right? I say this all the time, unless Black people, Black neighborhoods, and Black businesses succeed. So, but that is swimming upstream in America today. So it's not like you can be calm, or you can be complacent, or you can get tired if you want to succeed, if Memphis is to succeed. And so, I mean, I try to do this riverfront work from that perspective. I want Memphis to win. And for Memphis to win, we have to beat the odds. And we can, there's only one way for us to win. And that is, again, if Black people, Black neighborhoods, Black businesses don't get lifted up, we don't win. And I think, you know, of all the challenges I've dealt with in cities, and, you know, I've had so many great opportunities over the last 15, 20 years, this to me is the juiciest challenge. It's the most interesting. Even if you just remove all the morality and the socials, and you just say, okay, strategically, how do you do that? I think that's in a racist America. How do you do that? That, I just think it's an interesting mind puzzle, to say nothing of the morality and the you know, the value. I mean, the economic, I mean, you put all that. I just think also strategically, it's such an interesting question. I mean, you're in business, you know, you think about strategy all the time. How do we win? I think that's strategy for cities. And so I am right where I want to be right now. I think it's the most... We have the most interesting opportunities and most interesting challenges, I think, of any city in America.
Listen, you know what?
I feel like I need to take like a deep breath and take a sip of water after that. Like,
I'm going to take a sip of water because...
Yes, please, because there was so much in there. I don't even know where to start. Like,
well, you start with having conversations on the Just Be Real Sis podcast, because these are real conversations with real people. That's where you start. And, you know, you said so many things, and I just had a conversation with a person the other day, and, you know, there are two things that, well, there are lots of things, but there are two things that you'll really know if a person's from Memphis with these two questions. You'll say, where are you from? And they'll say a neighborhood, more than likely. And then they'll tell you what high school they graduated from. And it's really interesting, but it's unique to our city. But when people try to give Memphis this bad rap, and I get it, you know, and I know all of the statistics, the first thing I will always say, and I lead with, is I am Memphis, right? Memphis is a city of people. And I'm like, have you met any of these people? So to have this conversation with you today, not having met you ever before, I mean, it's just, it stands behind the message that I preach all the time. As a matter of fact, I'm going to get you a shirt, She from Memphis. I don't know if you have it, but I have one. I'm going to make sure that I send it to you, because you definitely said it's the South Memphis of me. And I just did an interview the other day, and someone was asking me something. I was like, do you understand? I'm from Memphis. And so... And only Memphians will know what that means. And
she never misses an opportunity.
Never do I miss an opportunity.
Well, I'm from Nashville, so we have this kind of back and forth. But listen, she will stand Memphis against any city you put in the way.
So any city.
I saw her face when you said that. I was like, oh, here we go.
Here we go. I can find you. So for every bad thing you can point out, I can point out, you know, 10 good things. Now, having said that, you know, growing up here and spending so many different occasions in the parks downtown and walking around Tom Lee. One of the things I was sharing with sister earlier, I said, but you know, I don't know that I knew the history of it until I was an adult. So can you talk to us just a little bit about, with the redevelopment, how you'll be able to continue to highlight the rich legacy of Tom Lee and some of your plans around there? I don't know how much you can tell us, but I'm interested in to know that, because again, I had no idea. I spent, you know, 4th of July, countless times down there, but having no idea, you know, no one taught me, hey, this is the history and this is what happened in this area.
Yeah, you know, Tom Lee Park is a really interesting park because of course, it's named for an everyday hero, Tom Lee, who, you know, couldn't swim, had a little skiff, was working when the Engineers Club boat on its inaugural voyage sank. And really there were very few passengers rescued that, or who made it safely to shore that he did not rescue. The city gave him a little house in North Memphis and a job as a sanitation worker. Now that's the best we could do, you know, right? That's the best we could do. So a wonderful artist here named Sebastian Carson has translated his story into a beautiful spoken word piece that we've got video on. It's on our website at memphisriverparks.org, and I'm so proud of it. And we are, so there's this wonderful call about Tom Lee's story, which I think is everyone, you know, we all have opportunities in life to be a hero or a heroine. And, you know, when we have an opportunity to be courageous, do we take that opportunity or do we let it pass us by? And, you know, and courage can come in a lot of different forms, as you know. And who do we stand up for? You know, who do we, you know, what do we stand up for? I mean, that takes courage. So I love that story as inspiration for this park. And the park is going to be just drop dead gorgeous. I truly believe we have on our hands the best waterfront park in America once this is built. It's right there at the front door of Memphis, front door of Tennessee. So, you know, it's a piece of real estate that probably is the most visible piece of real estate in Memphis. And I think it will say a lot about our ambitions as a city when we build this park, but it also at the same time will be the only vacation a lot of Memphians ever get. And I'm down in the park every day about 6, 7, 8 o'clock. And we're, you know, filled with people who are trying to be outdoors during this pandemic. They feel safer outdoors. They're working out outdoors. They're running up the green roof. We've got athletes. We've got families with kids. We've got people buying snow cones. I mean, it's lovely to see. And I didn't expect this, but the joy of my job is being down on the riverfront with Memphians. And they are of all incomes. And it's just, for the most part, is joyous. They get along and they're just lovely, lovely people who, you know, want to pet your dog, and everybody's got on something from the Grizzlies, and you just feel like you're one with humanity in the company of strangers. And I love it. It's important. It's important in ways that don't always show up in an economic impact study, although we have one of those, and the economic impact of the park will be significant. But that's not the real, I mean, that's great and it's important for all of us. That's not the real significance of this park. It's not the real significance of this riverfront. This is a riverfront for everyone. And if you're a citizen of Memphis, you own a piece of this park and you own a piece of this riverfront. And that to me is what's special, that everybody can come together on an equal footing and say, this is mine, I own this. And I think that's the best of cities.
So it's clear that you are driven by a couple of key concepts, which go right into my next question. But it's interesting the way you said this will be the only vacation that a lot of Memphians have. And while it is extremely true, it's sad. But we're encouraged that you recognize that that's part of this process, because you're really working to create a destination, not just a park, but a right. destination where people can feel like they are a part of what's coming. And so the next question, right in line with what you were saying, you know, why do you think that it's important, not just in Memphis, but cities across the country, to renew their focus around creating spaces that provide equity and access to everyone?
Well, equity and access to everyone is what public ought to be about. That's what public space ought to be about. It shouldn't be about how do you monetize it, you know, how do you set up fences and charge $60 a day to get in. It's really about, and that's fine, and you've got to raise money occasionally, right? And you've got to have festivals, and all that's great. But let's not value public space in that way. And I would just say, you know, if the fundamental assumption in a democracy is that we all have a privilege and a responsibility to participate. And if we can't participate on equal footing, and if a majority of us can't find a way to get along, right, then I think a democracy can't succeed. I mean, a community can't succeed. And the public spaces managed well and managed for equity become, I think, a foundational building block to community building and to democracy and to equity. That's really the vision we have for this entire riverfront. And Tom Lee Park is going to be the central part of that. Of that space. It's interesting to me, if I could just say another word about this, because I've been thinking a lot about this and how we actualize equity. It's, you know, we understand, I think, how to do it in the organization. You know, we've got very big minority and women-owned business enterprise numbers in both our operating expense as well as our capital expenditures. You know, we do engagement, et cetera, but you know, in the space itself, it's We do, I think, a very good job of it, but it's a challenge. I mean, because managing public space is a challenge. And I've been thinking about why there's so much nostalgia about Mud Island. And, you know, if you think about it, Mud Island was a controlled environment that you paid to get into. And so there was a certain separation of, you know, the haves and the have-nots, even at Mud Island. And, you know, a couple, 3 years ago when I got here, we made Mud Island a free public park, just like the rest of our parks. And I think, honestly, free is threatening. Public is threatening. If your public, the public with which the community you are part of, you know, if there are enough people who look different than you, that threatens you. And we have to push. And importantly, pull. And what I mean is you got to push, but you got to pull. And the push is nudging people into public space, but also luring them into public space. I think allure and seduction is very important in public space, particularly in Memphis. So one of the things we're trying to do with Tommy Park is really seduce people into using public space and making it their own. And people who've got financial options about where they spend time, I want to seduce them into that same space that people with no options, and this will be the only vacation they have. I want those people sharing space because, again, that's fundamental to community building and that's fundamental to democracy. So I don't know. Those sound like lofty concepts, but every single day we're cleaning and managing and entertaining and welcoming people into the park. So for me, it doesn't stay lofty. It actually has to come right to ground. And that's what we do with our team every day.
It's really interesting. This conversation is around Memphis, but you could really apply it to any urban city, in my opinion. One of the things that you said that I didn't know is that Mud Island was free. I just had this conversation with my children about things that I did growing up. So we had a water park here, Adventure River. We had Celebration Station. We really don't have many things for our youth to do. So one, that's encouraging, but two, how do we really solve for, again, attracting people to come and not being afraid to bring their family and really celebrate the common area? And I'm sitting here, and because my business brain, I'm always trying to solve for something. I'm like, put up signs. I don't care. Like, you know, have pictures. I'm not a threat. Or I don't know, have families with different backgrounds. You know, I'll take a picture with me and my children. You can put us up. You know, we come to this park. I don't know what that looks like, but we definitely have work to do around creating this idea that we can come together. You just said it. You just expressed right now during a pandemic, people feel safe being outside. You talked about humanity. You talked about, you know, just the synergy around our NBA team. So I don't know how we solve for that, but I definitely think having conversations like this is so necessary. To kind of go back, we talked earlier about what we're doing here today and collaboration over competition, and that not just being, you know, a hashtag. It is so important to us to really support other women. And sis, if you could just share with Carol, I love when you position it about going through the door, and then I'll ask my question. But can you share her, you know, our thoughts around that?
So we have this conversation probably once or twice a day where we look for opportunities to just highlight one another or other women. Like, we're really committed to the fact that this can happen. And so the way we talked about it one day is that, you know what, sometimes you're the person that's supposed to go through the door first. Sometimes another person is supposed to go through the door first, and sometimes we're supposed to go through the door together. But that isn't the point. The point is, whoever goes first, just leave the door open.
And I just love that. And it sounds like that's exactly what you've done, Carol, because we've also said, even if you choose not to collaborate with me, just don't hurt me. You know, just don't hurt me. Even if you don't, you know, make the decision to partner with me, please don't speak a bad word about me. So with that, what would you tell women to encourage them to do business with one another? What's been your message around that with the people that you work with?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think being intentional is really important, and understanding maybe, again, it's not, as you said, it may be that you and I can't do business together today, but you know, I may know someone who really needs what you have. And I think it's just, it's like doing the things women are really good at doing, which is networking and connecting with others. And just being intentional about putting those folks together. I think also, you know, this is a challenge, I think, for all of us. And it's finding the time, you know, when your inbox is full and you've got kids or you've got, you know, all these responsibilities and you think, I just can't take another informational interview, or I can't, you know, somebody's reaching out to me for help. You know, if you can just stay open to those kinds of requests. I got one this weekend, and from a young woman who, a friend in Chattanooga introduced me to a young woman who wants to go in, you know, the sort of the field I'm in, and how could I help her? But I also think it's incumbent upon those of us who are asking for help to do the best job we can in framing our request. I'm sure you both, because you're successful women, have had the problem of someone comes to see you and they don't know what they want. And I think sometimes women are afraid. We're afraid to ask what we want. I mean, I'm still afraid to ask for what I want sometimes. And that, you know, when you're trying to raise $60 million, you better be ready to ask for what you want. And so we have to make it easy on the women we're seeking help from. We've got to be willing to ask. We've got to know what we want. And we've got to be able to ask for what we want.
Boy, are you sure we're not related? Now, my daddy is this, so.
We're literally shaking our heads like we don't even know what to say, because I cannot tell you. We just had this conversation yesterday.
almost verbatim.
Like, that's why we were just sitting here smiling and shaking our heads and looking at one another, because I called sister and I said, I just want you to know that I have been a negotiating machine this week. And she was like, that's right. That's what you do. And we were just encouraging each other in this space about the power of asking and being specific about what you want and how it just translated to wins, you know, over and over again over the past week. That was the conversation we had. So
you're motivating me.
We're motivating each other.
Please, to our listeners, if you didn't write that down, I will even challenge you and say most people, particularly women, they don't get what they want because they don't know what they want. They don't even know the ask. They don't know where to begin. So identify what it is that you want and then ask for it. Just as boldly as a man would ask you for what he wants, whatever that is. And I know as women I always say we have an ethos of information, because we like to use a lot of words when sometimes you got to just get down to it and say, this is what I need and this is my ask. And, you know, don't be afraid, because again, when you're trying to raise money, that's really the only formula, is just going in there and creating the value and then asking for what you want. But yeah, that is so funny. We just had this conversation yesterday.
Well, don't you think that this is all wrapped up with, you know, I've always thought women have to carry so many identities, and I don't know, maybe with young women, maybe the whole thing has changed. But, you know, if you're thinking, for instance, about sex, right, then you're not supposed to ask for what you want, because you're, you know, like, oh, it's a game, right? So, okay, I can't ask for what I want. And it's, but now I'm supposed to go into the office and ask for what I want. And I do think there's kind of a, And you keep going, right? I mean, then there's the mom. And then, I mean, we carry so many identities. I think it's sometimes really hard to know which identity, which hat I'm supposed to have on now in terms of negotiation. I don't know. It's a challenge. I always think men can carry kind of one identity all the way through a day. Women really can't do that.
Well, that sounds like episode two. I mean, we could, right? We could talk about this and dive into that. And I don't know how we solve for it, but I agree. We have to switch. We pivot all day long.
All day long.
And we'll do it again today. Like we'll have this we'll have this conversation, feel all good, and you're right on a conference call, and it's a different person that has to show up. And so maybe that is a conversation that we explore. Sister, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I was taking some notes because we're given the advice to ask for what you want, but then to your point, Carol, is it really just that easy?
Yeah.
I don't think it is, but I can tell you this. I feel so seen. I'm learning so much as Carol was talking, because I'm like, yes, that's it. That's exactly right. Sometimes we don't even get to carry the same hat through a single hour. To your point, we have to pivot often and we have to pivot quickly. And so I think having this conversation around the ask is so important, because we don't want that to get lost in all of the different roles we have to play. But I can tell you this, I understand now why over 900 leaders have had a conversation with you, because I'm sure they learned from you just as much as you learned from them. But I'd like to talk more about that. Like, what were some of the lessons that you took away from those conversations that you had with those leaders?
You know, one thing I learned is that this was early in email days, but if you can believe that, but I learned that if you reached out to really powerful people, at night or on off hours, they would respond and you wouldn't have to go through their secretaries. Or back in the day, right? There are no secretaries anymore, but that was great. It was like, okay, I can get to anyone. And then I learned that if you ask people to talk with you like on the phone or even over video conference at the time, like they didn't have to travel. They didn't have to like write a speech. They were just answering questions. Almost anyone would say yes, which was great. So all of a sudden here I am sitting in Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm calling people who had been my heroes, who've written books, who, you know, like big time folks. And they would talk to me. I was like, well, this is great. So, I mean, in fact, I even got a job off of one of them because I'll tell you a funny quick story. I arranged an interview with Richard Daley, who was the mayor of Chicago. And this is actually a good women's story. Okay, so they sent me a book after the interview, which was nice. He used to do that for everybody, right? And then I sent back a note thanking him for the book. And then they had a job available to run CEOs for Cities. They were going to move it from Boston to Chicago. And one of his assistants called and said, are you coming to the CEOs for Cities meeting? And I said, no, I wasn't invited, but you tell Mayor Daley, if he wants me to be at a meeting next time, invite me. I don't know what made me so sassy. I don't know. It just came out. And about an hour later, they called me back and they said, well, will you be in Chicago anytime soon? And I thought, you know, yes, I am making a trip to Chicago. The dates aren't set yet, but I will be in Chicago. Why? Well, Mayor Daley would like to see you. So I ended up with a job running CEOs for Cities in Chicago just based on saying yes. And, you know, following up, and it was actually, when I think back on it, it's kind of a miracle, but it was just a matter of, back to our point, right? Ask for what you want. I was like, well, if he wants me there, you tell him to invite him. I'll come. And I thought that was, looking back on it, sounds really brash, but it worked.
Okay.
This is getting scary now. Like, this is getting scary.
First of all, you know, I know the listeners can't see us, but we're not in the same place, because if we were in the same place, I would have had to have hugged you just then, because we could have just stopped the interview. And I think this will be one of those interviews that probably we're getting. I don't know what everyone else is getting, but I'm learning so much and getting so much, because we talk about, just tell us, sister, what we, this happened last night at, I mean, this is at last night at 12:20 or early this morning at around 12:20. I think the conversation started about 11:40. So just, I have no words. I have no words right now.
So look, I have to like take some water for this. Yesterday, we were having conversations around manifestation of the miraculous and how important it is to say out loud the things that you want to manifest in your life. But not only that, to have conversations with people who can align with you around those dreams. Last night, we were on the phone to 2 o'clock in the morning, just celebrating the miracles of one day, because yesterday we collectively, and with another friend of ours, we fasted together around some things that we are really, really manifesting in the world. So to hear you talk about just reach out, just ask, I was telling sister, like, the magic of where we are right now is that social media takes away every gatekeeper, takes away every obstacle that you would have to connect with people that inspire you. And I'm like, we're going for every single person that we want to have a conversation with. And we agreed on that. We spoke it collectively that this is going to happen. So what you just said was so many levels of confirmation for us. Not even 24 hours later, that is the power of manifestation.
And then last night at 11:40, I said, what are you doing? And you said, I'm sending an email back. I'm replying. And Carol just said, sending emails late at night. So again, you know, hopefully you guys took a note of that. And we said, yes, that works. And here we are again today, less than 24 hours later, and we hear it. Wow.
And to your point, sister, I woke up this morning with a response to the email that I sent late last night. It was waiting for me when I woke up this morning. Prepare for next steps.
We start our days with, what are we manifesting today? We expect a miracle. And then last night, because we were on so late, I said, what are we waking up to? And so here we have it. And I just love it, man. So this is really one last question. And again, you've covered so much, and I just can't thank you enough for your time. Wish I could just drive down there wherever you are and just
fuck you. Like,
have coffee with you. But I just don't want the conversation to end. But this is one that I love, and I always get it, and I'm always curious to hear other women answer this question. So we talked about all of the things that you've been doing over the span of your career, but if you could go back and talk to that younger Carol, what would you tell her?
Wow, that's a, you know, take more risk. Don't be afraid. Use your voice. Don't think that everybody in the room is smarter than you are, no matter what position or degree they have. Those are probably the things I might say. I'm thinking, it's such a provocative question. I love the question. But, you know, like I said, I'm lucky. I have lived a very charmed life. And I didn't deserve the good things that have come my way. I love what I do. I love the place I live. I just love being in this moment at this time. I wish I had another, a double life starting now. So but I could have taken more risk earlier. And I could have been, I think also I could have been, it took me a while again to use my own voice. My voice was coming through lots of other people. I would write for others, but I was not writing and speaking for me. And I should have done that earlier.
That's great. That's great. Wow. Listen.
I feel like I just had like a whole session. I don't know about you, but I feel like so light after this conversation. And I can't wait to go back and listen to it so I can take notes on everything you said today. But we also, talking to your younger self, we also want to create the opportunity for other people to figure out the best way to support what you're doing. And so what is the best way for our listeners to be able to support your efforts?
Oh, that is so nice of you to ask. Thank you for your generosity. Come take a look. Come experience what the riverfront is all about. I mean, that's the most important thing right now. Obviously, we are still looking for funds to build this next park. We completed 3 capital projects since I've been here in 3 years, which is kind of amazing. This next one is a big one, but it's probably the most important one. And there's a way to donate on our website at memphisriverparks.org. And I say that because we take very small donations. We take monthly donations. And I love it when people want to be part of it. So those are some of the ways. We also look for volunteers. And the other thing is, use your voice. I mean, every time you try to do something new and big, there's a lot of controversy because, people just, especially in the social media world, sometimes it's hard to get the facts and it's hard to get to the truth. But I would say be, as you have modeled, be generous in terms of saying, well, wait a minute, what is going on? Let me find out if it just for yourself and wish good things for your city. Wish good things for your city. We got enough crap to deal with and push back on in Memphis. To make this city go forward, which for me is making all of us move forward together, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of uplift. And we don't need a lot of drag on us as a city and as a people. So I think you've modeled it. Be generous in your thoughts about Memphis and believe in the future of Memphis. Because when we believe good things are going to happen, then we act on those beliefs. And so if we believe the city's going to grow and get better and more people are going to succeed, we'll say, how do I get a part of that success? How can I be part of that success? How can I invest in that success? And that's the way people can support, I think, the work we're doing, because it's really all about supporting Memphis and our future.
Well, you definitely have our commitment to keep this conversation going.
Great. I love it. I love meeting you both. It was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And who knows, we might need to do an episode 2 to talk about some of the other things as we go back and listen. But this has just been wonderful. And, for our listeners, they're all over the country. If you guys decide to make a trip to Memphis, maybe we can all hang out together. We have some real Memphis ambassadors here. So we can show you all things Memphis. And I'm going to be sure and get you that shirt, Carol.
I love it.
She means it. So Thank you. Just like Sister was saying, thank you so much for being here and just giving such a genuine and fresh perspective about the things that you're doing for our city. I'm excited to see what's to come. And so I think this conversation will hopefully create some excitement with some other people in our city. But we just appreciate you for being so open, sharing your time and space with us today. And this has been a joy. This has been a joy. So thank you.
Same for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe and share so we can grow this movement. If you have show ideas or would like to be considered as a special guest, you can email us at justberealsis@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at justberealsispodcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. As always, remember to serve first, stay encouraged, be kind, and just be real, sis.